Hi, my name is John Kim. I'm a therapist who went through his own rebirth many years ago, and I've been documenting my journey ever since, sharing my life lessons and revelations. I believe in casual over clinical, with you instead of at you. I come unrehearsed on purpose because self-help doesn't have to be so complicated.
So I just put my four-year-old down, and as I was putting her down, she, like any four-year-old, stalls by asking for things, and she asked for chocolate milk and floss. She's not even four. She had apple in her teeth and she wanted floss. We are not dentists. I don't know how she even knows about floss, but she asked for floss like she was gonna floss her teeth before bed. And I was thinking to myself, I don't think I discovered floss, because I grew up with parents who, I'm not blaming them, but they basically taught me nothing as far as as far as life skills, right? They just bought us Levi's and made sure we had some cool shit, but you know, as far as like flossing, making your bed, how to do the laundry, they taught us none of that. But she asked for floss, and it reminded me of the time we were in Palm Springs, and so Logan drinks kombucha. We started giving her kombucha when she was a baby, because she started sipping it off of us when we were drinking it. And we were in Palm Springs at a restaurant, and the server was like 70, walks up to our table. We also taught Logan early on to say excuse me, and for some reason she just ran with it. So she just says excuse me, like constantly she says excuse me. It's like annoying, right? So she says to the waiter, excuse me, do you have some kombucha? And the waiter looked at her like, fucking California kid, are you kidding me? He said, no, we don't have kombucha. And I think he wanted to strangle her. Anyway, as I was, just after I put her down, I picked up the remote control to go through Netflix. Now, the thing about television these days, I don't know about you, but for me, there's so much to watch that I watch nothing, right? So I pick up the remote, I go through Netflix, and I'm just kind of flipping through it like you're swiping. They are just baseball cards. And then I don't want to watch anything. So I basically see what is on television, but I do not watch any television. And I was thinking to myself, you know, why do I have the urge to pick up my phone and scroll through social more than watching something on TV? Now, there are some shows, of course, documentaries and stuff that I really enjoy, but overall, I actually genuinely prefer scrolling social. And I'm not saying like, you know, mindlessly, with intention. So just seeing what my friends are up to, you know, following specific people who talk about certain things. So part of it is educational, part of it is just feeling kind of connected to a community. And I just realized that we live in a world where, I think today more than ever, you know, the whole celebrity is dead, and we are more interested in real people's lives. And I think this is a good thing. And I think this is why this whole idea of a blockbuster movie is dying. And this whole idea of a movie star is dying, because we'd rather watch our neighbors. We would rather watch something that we have customized and curated. And I'm saying this because I, about a month ago, I was at a restroom and I put Logan on top of a towel dispenser because the public restroom is, I didn't want her to stand on the floor. I had to take a shit, and I've heard way too many stories about kids getting abducted, especially girls, you know, the unthinkable. And so I brought her with me, and it was like a 20-second video. I posted it, and it got 6 million views, which is the most eyes any of my in the last 16 years I've been, whether it's a blog post or a video, it's the most eyes that have ever been on anything that I've posted. And the reason I'm sharing that is because I realized that is proof that people are more interested in the direct conduit into someone's life, because I guess because it's honest and there's truth there than things that are produced. So, speaking of produced, speaking of social media and me expressing myself, I think out of everyone I know around me, I tend to be the one who posts the most. And I know a lot of people, they hate posting, and they're like, fuck, I gotta do it because it's helpful for my job or my practice. It's, you know, it's something that that is now kind of standard. I don't like doing it, but I have to. I actually I don't even think about if I like it or don't. It's just ingrained in my lifestyle, and I think it's because I started 16 years ago on Tumblr after a divorce, and at that time, and this is pre-social media, blogs were brand new, and someone told me to get on a new website called Tumblr, and I got on it, and I just started blogging, and I created a blog called The Angry Therapist, because I thought that was kind of funny. And my very first post was called My Fucking Feelings. And I remember how I felt. And I think partly it was because of where I was at my life at the time. Because I was rebuilding my life after divorce. And I was in transition. I was just a baby therapist working in nonprofit, getting hours toward licensure. I got obsessed with blogging because I think it was my little secret thing that I got to do that was for me, you know? I remember when I was around 10, what I had then was also, the version of that was my Legos. And this is before Legos came with instructions. Today, I think Legos are ridiculous because you put something together and it looks exactly like it's supposed to on the box. It has all the instructions and there's no fun in what a kid could build with his imagination. Back then when I was 10, I had two or three giant bins of Legos, hundreds or thousands of pieces. And I would go into my room and I would just build and build and build and create. And of course show my friends, but I would be in that room building and hitting flow states, forgetting about time. And the Tumblr post-divorce was me connecting to that 10-year-old who got to express himself creatively, and it was his thing, you know. When I was building Legos in my bedroom, there was no one in there with me. I was by myself. I was in my zone, and it was just for me. And so I think that's what Tumblr did for me. And so it laid tracks early on for me to start documenting my story, expressing myself. And I also realized that I was more transparent on the blog than I would be in real life. Like, I would write things and share things that I probably wouldn't tell someone in person, but something about hiding behind a screen and punching keys when I should have been writing case notes made me super vulnerable and honest. There's a lot of noise happening outside, and I'm kind of scared because we live in an area where there's bears. Bears go through our trash, and I hear someone or something going through our trash. Now, I know I'm birdwalking, but one sec. I left the front door wide open because I'm the only one home, and if Logan gets out of bed, I want her to see that she's not alone in the house. But by having the door wide open, animals can go inside our house. a bear or a raccoon or a bobcat or a mountain lion. Okay, I see what it is. It's the Amazon guy. The Amazon guy just dropped off a bunch of boxes and I just waved at him and he's looking at me thinking, oh my God, there's a fucking Korean dude in a sauna that, and the inside of the sauna looks like a club. By the way, shout out to Spiritual Quest for the sauna. It's beautiful. I love it. I'm not making fun of the lights. These lights actually, they're infrared. They help you, or are supposed to help you. But they are coming out via rainbow, like a dance club. And so the Amazon guy is probably like, what the fuck is that half-naked Korean dude talking into his chopstick? I have a microphone attached, literally have a microphone attached to my chopstick. So I'm holding it. And he's in sauna talking into his microphone half-naked in his garage. What the fuck is going on? But I gotta say, I'll bet you these Amazon guys have seen everything. Anyway, thank God it wasn't a bear. Okay, so back to Tumblr. 16 years laying tracks of, I just waved to him. 16 years of laying tracks of expressing myself and my feels. And then, so when social media came out, I just basically rolled that into Instagram, Facebook, and then when podcasting came out, took a butter knife to social media, and then, you know, and you know, here I am now talking into my chopstick in my sauna, and I'm at like 700 or 800 episodes, and I don't think about it as work. It's so ingrained in me. It's kind of like how people who do fitness and it's become their life and they do fitness and they've done it for so many years that it's just a way of life. It's like eating breakfast. It's like taking a shit. Me turning on the camera or the microphone, whether I am answering a question or in this episode talking about my feelings, just rambling and shit, or engaging with a community or writing a blog post, all of that just has become, because I've just swam too far to turn back, it's become my life. I don't think about it as like a business or I need to do it. It's just become something that I do. I brush my teeth. I work out. I ice plunge. And I do this stuff. I do content. I hate that word content, but I document my story. You know, I also write self-help books. One thing I wanted to share, what's hard for me is, and I think this is why I'm here, half naked talking to you, is because I also use social media and various platforms as, and this is what was therapeutic for me with Tumblr, as kind of my therapist, you know. You know, sitting in this sauna, I feel like I'm in a confessional, but the confession, the act of expressing my truth and state, is like journaling. It is very therapeutic in that I am, without rehearsal, allowing what's inside to surface and to put that, in this case, not on paper, but on video. And I don't even think of video as video. I just think of it as if I'm like typing on a screen. You know, I don't think about the permanence of video. I don't think about what I look like, what I'm doing. I just do it. And there's something very therapeutic. And the reason I'm saying that is because, so at night, after the baby goes down, it's when I struggle the most. And I know this is a pattern of mine. And I wonder if I get it from my dad. I know my dad, he was never diagnosed of being bipolar, but man, he had mood swings. He was the kind of guy where when things were good, I mean, he was very charismatic and he was very expressive and jokey. And I mean, he was like the funnest guy in the room when things were good. When things were bad, I mean, it was the sky was falling and there was no hope. right? I didn't know his internal life, but he was also an alcoholic. And so the highs and lows, I don't know if it's genetic or if it's just been passed down by being raised by him, but I have that. And, you know, when I hit the lows, I understand like the loneliness of, you know, probably like what Robin Williams felt. And I don't know his story other than, you know, what the public knows, but I understand how lows can get so low that you question everything. You know, you question, what's the point of all this? Why, you know, do I need to suffer or struggle? Like, I understand the feeling of hopelessness. And at night, it hits hard, you know. And then in the morning, I'm filled with hope. I am super grateful, and I have so much energy, and I want to, you know, attack the day, and I feel super creative. And then night hits, and it's like the carriage turning into a pumpkin. I could get kind of depressed. And so I think, consciously or subconsciously, I'm using podcasting as a way, like I did use Tumblr back in the day, as my therapy. And there's something therapeutic about just talking, even if you don't have a point, just to express, you know. I just hit post after my talks. I do it publicly, but I think that's why I do it. I think that's why I do it so much. And I think what I get out of it is sometimes more than what my listeners get out of me. And it's a space for me to talk about my feelings, you know. So at 50, I've been feeling a little, I don't know if the word is down, definitely feeling like, okay, the 90s was 30 years ago. Like, the oldies when I was growing up, high school, college, was like Elvis, Beatles, like the oldie station, right? Beatles, Elvis, all that shit from the 50s. And not shit, it's good quality music, but music from the 50s, 60s. Now that same station, that is the oldies, is playing all the music I went to high school, all the music I was listening to when I went to high school, Depeche Mode, The Cure, The Smiths. And I'm reminded every day how far the 90s were. I mean, that, you know, it's back in style now, it's vintage. And as a 50-year-old, holy shit, just knowing that I've been on this planet for half a century, it never hit me until this year. And I am grateful that, you know, I could still get up and move. I don't have any, like, major injuries, illnesses. I'm fairly in decent shape. I haven't lost all my hair. I still have a libido, you know, and I'm grateful for those things. But I'm at that point in my life where, because of my age, it's like, it's not that I'm tired or it's not that I'm not ambitious anymore. There's a strange calming, there's this feeling that you are going to be more picky on what you do with your time or how you spend your time. At 50, it's easier to say no. You care less about what people think. You know, at this point, fuck, I mean, I don't care what you think about me, because, I mean, to a certain extent I do, of course, because I'm human, but I'm 50. And also, the shit that I've posted, because there's so much, I can't delete any of that. I mean, it would take a lifetime just to... So it's like, there's a letting go. There's an acceptance. There's a settling in to self. And yes, there is liberation in that, you know. And yes, there is a grounding in that and a comfort in self, which also is a connection to self. There is more of a me going through life, taking a beat and a breath, which is usually not like me. I spent most of my life very high strung and people telling me to calm down. So there is this kind of blanket of calm and a centeredness, right? At the same time, with that comes just the knowing, with all the grays in your hair, that that you are older, that you are 50. And I do feel the clock ticking, you know? I want to do more. At the same time, life has taught me that that kind of wanting is only healthy to a certain extent, because if you want so much that you start to pause life, which I've done for so many years of my life, then the want becomes, you become a prisoner to that want, right? And then I think that want actually moves further away from you. And so there's an art, I think, to wanting more, but at the same time, accepting where you're at, how far you've come, what you have. And it's in that kind of acceptance and gratitude that I think that we can become magnets. And so strangely, at 50, the ticking clock to me is louder, because, you know, because of the things that I want to do and accomplish. And at the same time, because I'm 50, although the ticking clock is louder, there is in my body a feeling of no longer chasing. And so it's this weird limbo experience of like wanting, but also too tired to care or chase. And it's a strange state. I'll be honest, I don't like it. It's new. It's weird. I loved my 40s because I felt like I was climbing. And now that I'm 50, it doesn't feel like I've reached the mountain or the top of anything. It feels kind of like a tunnel. And I don't like that feeling. I feel old. I feel kind of outdated. I feel like it's easy to be forgotten. I caught an episode of Pauly Shore on YouTube, and he has his own little show on YouTube now, and most of his guests have no idea who he is, and you know, because he's from my generation, and just watching him do this little home production show on YouTube, I guess it's a podcast, with this little scarf around his neck, it kind of made me feel sad, you know, because I think he's older than me, but you could see it in his eyes that, like, he wants what he feels like he's meant to do in this world, entertain and host a show and all that. And at the same time, there's a look in his eye where he knows that he has been forgotten. And I caught that the other day, and it kind of made me sad. And I related to that. I'm not a celebrity, so I'm not forgotten in that way, but kind of forgotten in that no one cares. No one cares because the world is moving too fast. And there are more profiles than stars in the sky. So all the more reason to be you, you know, all the more reason to actually do your thing, because there's also people on YouTube who have flourished because Hollywood wouldn't let them in, so they created their own thing, and now they are really thriving. So it's one thing I remind myself is to continue to be you, continue to be honest, and continue to share your story. Anyway, thank you for listening. Be